Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
125 at Nation Radio. Hi, this is Alan Mitchell. And you know what? One of the good things about the playoffs is you get to scoot around the internet looking for good blogs and sites to follow other teams that are in the playoffs. And unfortunately, we've become very used to that as Edmonton Oilers fans. One of the really good sites and interesting sites is run by Cassie McClellan, Associate Managing Editor of RawCharge.com, which is devoted to the Tampa Bay Lightning. Welcome, Cassie.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You know, the first thing I want to talk to you about is Dwayne Roloson. We loved watching him play here in spring 2006 when he was 70. Now he's about 80 years old, and he's doing a great job for you guys, too.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, the goaltending is a question for a lot of teams in the NHL. Unless you have a Carey Price or a Martin Brodeur, I mean, everybody is struggling for a good goalie. So Dwayne Roloson in Tampa has just been amazing.
Yzerman was very aggressive and has been very aggressive going out and, you know, getting the deadline deal for Roloson. Tell me a little bit about how this series has gone so far, how you see it going, and the Lightning, I think, would probably be slight underdogs against Pittsburgh, even without Crosby and Malkin, but it looks like this is going to be a long game, possibly a seven-game series.
A lot of people are predicting six or seven games. You know, Tampa Bay is expecting Crosby to come back at some point. Pittsburgh is denying that vehemently. But, you know, coming from Tampa Bay's point of view, you kind of have to play it that way and expect that, you know, the best player in the world will be coming back to play at some point. It's a mental game that the coach is playing with the team, and it's probably one of the better ones, frankly. But a lot of people have been saying it's going to be Tampa's offense versus Pittsburgh's defense. And, yeah, it hasn't really gone that way so far. On Wednesday, Tampa came out pretty flat. They came out hitting, which for them is not necessarily a good thing. They're really more of a finesse team than a physical team. So when they play physically, it kind of really takes away from their offense. And that was really shown in game one. And so in game two, they came back and played their game, how they usually play, and it was very successful for them. They came out, you know, passing and shooting, and that really is what they do best.
I was watching the Bolts play the Blues. I think it was Super Bowl Sunday. It was way back anyway. Stamkos scored his 40th goal early in the game, and he hit his head after the goal. It was a real simple play, a real quick play. Happens all the time in hockey. But
right.
He hasn't been as effective after that. Do you know what the – was it a concussion? Why did he score like five or six goals after that? And really, his season was not good after Super Bowl Sunday.
You know, that's a good question, and a question that Tampa Bay Lightning fans have been asking themselves ever since what happened to Stamkos's offensive production. But, you know, no one's saying anything. No one knows. I don't know if that was a concussion. I don't think it was, but, I mean, it's hard to say. If the player isn't going to talk, then, you know, you just don't know. But, you know, there's been talk that it might be a lingering injury that came after that. There's also been talk that he is very upset by the fact that he has not been granted a contract extension before. I think he was really, you know, holding on to that, and that didn't happen or hasn't happened. So, I mean, Yzerman is going to sign Stamkos. There's no doubt about that, but I think Stamkos is really hoping that would happen sooner rather than later.
Okay, that's good information. Let's talk draft. In 2008, the Lightning selected Steven Stamkos first overall. The following year, early in the draft, they took Victor Hedman second overall. Is there a sense now, 2 years later, that the Lightning made the right pick in 2009, despite the fact that they ended up passing on Matt Duchene and Evander Kane, who were still available? Is Hedman on track as a lottery high-end pick?
Yes, definitely. I mean, you have to remember, this guy's only 20, and, you know, defense might take a long time to mature in this league, and, I mean, defense is one of the most difficult positions to get down. I used to be a defenseman, actually, when I used to play, so I can kind of relate to what Hedman is doing and where he's coming from, and he's on track. He's going to be a really good defenseman. He's also, you know, not quite finished growing, and that kind of throws off his coordination a bit at times, I think. He's 6'6", so he's also a very lanky guy, and trying to figure out where his place is on the ice, as well as making sure his body is doing what it's supposed to be doing, is probably a bit challenging for him right now. So he's definitely going to be a very good defenseman once he grows into the whole role.
Yeah, it took Chara a while, too. Those big guys, they do take a while. Steve Yzerman has been very aggressive in terms of draft prospects over the last 12 months. The Lightning took Brett Connolly in the first round a year ago, despite some concerns about health, and then dealt their second-round pick from last year, Brock Bukemoom, at the deadline for Eric Brewer. Do you get the sense that Yzerman is focused on winning now or building for the future, or is it just a matter of they caught lightning in a bottle, pardon the pun, and had a nice playoff team?
I think the Yzerman is working for the future, and I think that he was just lucky enough to inherit a team that, you know, was playoff ready to go. The issues in the past couple of years with Tampa Bay has been purely front office issues and coaching issues, not personnel issues.
Okay.
When the new ownership, OK Hockey, had taken over Oren Kulas and Len Barry, they dismantled the team from top to bottom. First thing they did was fire. First thing they did was trade for Mike Smith and Jeff Halpern, and I'm totally blanking on the Finnish player that they picked up too. And so they fired Tortorella, and from the team Tortorella had coached to the team that Guy Boucher is now coaching, there are only 6 players left.
Okay.
In 3 years.
Yeah, it's been a quick turnaround. Do Lightning fans have a rivalry with Panther fans, or is it a one-sided off the ice as it is on the ice? Has there been enough, I guess, games of import for that rivalry to get going?
No, not really. Neither team has been good at the same time to really, you know, make any game important between the two. It's not at all in any way, shape, or form a rivalry. It's very friendly, actually. We have Raj Hart's the SB Nation blog group, and we have a very happy, friendly relationship with the Panthers blog. In fact, when the Panthers and the Lightning play, we switch blogs for game thread. So we'll have them over for like first period and third period, and over to their site for the second period. You know, so yeah, there's no way, shape, or form that right now the Florida Panthers and the Tampa Bay Lightning have a rivalry.
So there's a barbecue in the middle sort of thing?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, at this point, yeah. It's all because, you know, the Southeast Division, I know, has long been talked about as being the weakest division in the NHL. And for a long time, that is true. And so you'll find that the Southeast Division teams, the fans have a mentality that it's the division first. You have to win the division in order to make playoffs, because that has been the case for a very long time. Whoever wins the division is the only team from the Southeast Division to make playoffs. And so it's more closed-minded, I guess, more colloquial, more provincial, I guess. I don't know what the right word would be, but fans in the Southeast Division really just focus on the Southeast Division because of that.
Okay.
And the Panthers, like I said, when they were good, the Lightning weren't, and when the Lightning were good, the Panthers weren't. And so there's really never been any rivalry in that sense.
Okay. Cassie, thanks so much. I appreciate it, and we'll have you back again. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
That's Cassie McClellan, Associate Managing Editor of RawCharge.com, the Tampa Bay Lightning SBN blog site, and they do good work there, and we thank her for her time. By the way, I keep forgetting to mention, Oklahoma City against Hamilton starts at 2 o'clock today right here on Team 1260. Hamilton is up 1-0 in the series. They had a rather easy time of it against Oklahoma City, who, you know, basically sent down about 5 or 6 players from the Oilers. I suspect it'll be a better game today, and it starts in about a half an hour from right now, right here on Team 1260. This is Nation Radio, Edmonton Sports Radio, Team 1260. I believe we have Mr. Tim Correll from BlackHawkUp.com. Tim, are you there?
I am.
I love your site.
Oh, thank you.
I was reading today, and it wasn't you, it was Jeffrey Bartle, I believe, is the author. But how is right. this for an opening line? The Blackhawks are doing just enough to piss off everyone. There's hope, then it's ripped away, and with the glimmer flickering, last gasp, it's all over. Vancouver 2, Hawks 0. The way things have gone, I implore you to find a reason it will change on home ice. That's good writing right there.
Jeff is quite the guy, and he's got he doesn't make a big deal out of it, but he's got rather a pedigree behind him as a sports writer, unlike yours truly, who just does this, you know, for the pure notoriety and entertainment value, and you know, to have people key my car in parking lot.
Well, you shouldn't sell yourself short. You've caused quite a ruckus on the left coast with your inhumane treatment of the Sedins. You're going to be a favorite with Oiler fans. What have you been doing to the poor Sedin twins?
Well, you know, I happen to make mention of contrive a certain nickname for them that didn't go over well on the coast. They're rather fond of their young lads out there, and so they take offense when, you know, people like me in opposing markets tend to liken them to feminine hygiene products. Yep. So that's that didn't go over big, and I'm to be quite frank with us, you know, hold up here in Chicago and doing our thing and not really taking too much notice of what goes on elsewhere, we were rather shocked to find out that it had that news had spread beyond our fan base, and so you can just imagine our surprise as things started to cartwheel out of control on Wednesday.
Well, we'll let people go on your blog site to see what you called them, but it was it definitely caused a ruckus, and I'm glad to see it because the Canucks do look good, though. I know backs against the wall is old-fashioned. You're never in trouble until you lose a road game or a home game. John Tortorella was all over that last night. Down two games, how do you see this series playing out? The Blackhawks have lost a lot of depth from a year ago, and the Canucks are a hell of a team. Is it going to be a difficult series to go seven games? Or I don't think the Hawks will get swept, but where do you see it going from here?
Well, you know, as I said in my preview yesterday, it's up to the coach to come up with a plan, and it's up to the team to execute the plan. And so far, I really haven't seen either one. It's unfortunate, and maybe things will change around on home ice. However, it's going to have to be a pretty dramatic change. Obviously, this isn't the team from a year ago. Everyone knows that, and everyone can see that it's not a team who falls down 5-0 by the second period and then comes back to win it in overtime 6-5, as we managed to do, I think, in November of 2009 or something like that. There just isn't that kind of drive and confidence, I guess it is. And, you know, is it going seven games? No. Will we get swept? Probably not. But, you know, my original prediction of Hawks in five obviously is out the window. And unless I see something dramatically different in game three, I think it's probably the Canucks.
Which of those great Hawks players from last year, like, you know, Ladd and Byfuglien, which one do you really think the team misses the most?
You know, hindsight's always 20/20 in a circumstance like this, but it's easy to see the kind of impact that Andrew Ladd had when he kind of got his the space opened up for him in Atlanta. There was never going to be enough room for Andrew Ladd to be that kind of player in Chicago. The role of captain was filled. The role of the top six players, really, that was set. And he would occasionally crack that lineup, but not very often. And he certainly didn't have the kind of freedom from the coaches within the system that they were playing to be the guy that he has been for the Atlanta Thrashers. And so on the one hand, we miss him like crazy because he's a huge physical presence, a quick guy with great hands in front of the net, causes a lot of trouble in the offensive zone. But on the other hand, you really love to see him be able to come into his own like that after so many years in the league and a great year with a couple of great years in Chicago, and then go down to Atlanta and do as well as he's done. You know, you really feel happy for the guy, and you're glad that he's going to be able to make a solid impact down there. I think that everyone here has been kind of saying, oh, why we miss Buff so much. I tend not to agree with that too much. It's difficult to argue with the fact that it's, you know, somebody who more closely resembles a backhoe than he does an NHL winger, is a difficult commodity to replicate, but he wasn't happy playing forward. He was extraordinarily productive playing forward, but he wasn't happy there. And as we saw when he went back to Atlanta, he switched to defense. Not that it hurt his offensive product at all either. I think he's, close to 30 goals again this year, isn't he?
Yeah, great.
So, I think between those two guys, the one that really would have made a big difference having the Werke to have stayed with the Blackhawks would have been Andrew Ladd.
How much cap trouble are the Hawks in? Is it better this year than next year cap-wise?
Next year's actually, we've got a lot more ability to move around. Seabrook was the big question mark. Now that, question has been answered. Fortunately, he's staying put. We're in more or less of the same circumstance that we were last year going into the following season, where, the guys, the $3+ million men, the Bolin, Sharp, Hossa, Taves, Kane, and on the defensive zone, and you've got Jalmerson, Seabrook, Keith, and Campbell. Those roles are all taken care of, and those guys are locked in. It's the, what are you going to do on the million a year on down? Because, guys like Kopechke and Brower and, some of the new acquisitions like Michael Frolik, and also you've got the lower end of the spectrum with Jake Bowell and Fernando Pisani and Ryan Johnson. Do you re-sign those guys at that level and hold on to them, or are there better assets at the same money available in the free agent market? Do you just let them walk? There's going to be a lot of juggling in that bottom six forwards going forward. I think that the defense is, I think we're going to see Nick Leddy as a lock to make next year. He's in at, $1.11 million for the next 3 years on an entry-level contract. The kid is showing some serious potential. Obviously, he's got some holes in his game, and he needs to step it up a little bit in a couple of areas. Going on safari below the hash marks in the attacking zone is something I really can't get on board with, especially when we end up with him, standing, looking around in the stands, wondering what's going on as the puck sails past behind Crawford into the goal.
Rookie defenseman.
Yes, and, that was something interesting that I found as I was looking through the draft history with the Hawks, was the fact that these guys that are coming up, you take a look at where they came from, when we drafted them, and then the difference between when we drafted them and when their first year in the league was.
Yeah.
And when you look at someone like a Kane or Taves, Kane jumped, obviously, and he went from draft to starting lineup. Taves took a year. But then you get guys like Nicholas Hjalmarsson, 4 years.
Yep.
You've got Dustin Byfuglien, 4 years. Yep. Brent Seabrook, 2 years. Duncan Keith, 3 years. They just take more time to develop a defenseman, and those are the guys that are the serious talents.
Yep.
The wild card in there was Dustin Byfuglien, who was drafted 8th round overall.
Yep.
And, anyone who follows the draft as closely as many of the folks in your audience do know that, beyond rounds 1 and 2, anything you get after that is just gravy, especially as you get down into the, 7th round, 8th round, 9th round that we had a few years back. But the defensemen tend to take longer to mature, and so Leddy is still an extraordinarily young kid. He's got a lot of talent, he's got a lot of upside. But we just need to be patient with the fact that he is going to probably take those full 3 years to get to the point where we're all saying, yeah, the kid's a career player. We're going to make sure that he stays here for a while.
Tim, thanks so much. Appreciate your time.
Hey, it's not a problem.
Okay. That's Tim Correll from BlackhawkUp.com. Great site. And you know what he just talked about? That's a very interesting insight. That's what the Oilers are dealing in. Do you wait for Larson, or do you hope that Petrie and Plante and Tubert and all of those guys can deliver in a couple of years? Because it takes a long time for defensemen to develop, and, it could be Larson's 21 or 22-year-old year before he can really help the Edmonton Oilers. Coming up, Greg Brennan from Taking Note.